Welcome to the Volunteer State, our five-star podcast from the Knoxville News Sentinel and USA Today Network. I'm Blake Topmeyer here with John Adams and Adam Sparks. Guys, Tennessee's got a five-star recruit to go with this five-star podcast after the Monday commitment of quarterback Nico Iamaleava. Pledged to the Vols, giving Tennessee its first five-star quarterback, assuming he signs. Still got to get to December signing day. Will be the first five-star quarterback for Tennessee since James Banks in 2002. So you got to go back a couple decades. John, you remember the James Banks era?
Yeah, I didn't remember that he was a five-star. He was kind of a two-and-a-half-star quarterback on the field.
Well, that'd be the end of us talking about James Banks then.
Okay.
John, you got some historical perspective here. This commitment, five-star quarterback from California to Josh Heupel in year two. Biggest pledge for Tennessee since when?
Boy, that's a tough one. But the one that jumps out at me was Lane Kiffin late in the recruiting season.
Kiffin committed to the Vols?
In 2000.
Now, when he committed from the Vols.
No, I think he went to Fresno State, didn't he? 2009. He signed Bryce Brown, who was the number one running back in the country. And that just kind of came out of nowhere. It was a huge get, and it really gave the program some momentum. The hiring of Kiffin did, too. And then that recruitment, I thought, was the crown jewel of his recruiting class, which didn't live up to expectations, and neither did Bryce Brown.
Adam, Nico obviously is, Tennessee fans hope he'll be better than James Banks or Bryce Brown. But at this stage, it seems like a game changer for Tennessee's trajectory here. If they can start bringing in five-star quarterbacks, that raises the bar for what Tennessee's capable of here. How do you think this happened? I mean, as I said, it's not every day. It's not every year. It's not every decade that Tennessee gets a five-star quarterback. How were they able to land this one?
You know, if you think the rumors are true, there's some major NIL money in here. Some of that speculation, some of that's tied to one report that doesn't name Nico. It's possible. I mean, I think he got a lot of NIL money. What that number is, I'm not real sure. That had a hand in it. I think the fact that, you know, he was looking at Alabama and Georgia as well as Oregon and Miami, but Alabama and Georgia are also after Arch Manning. And, you know, Nico was number two, sort of a consolation prize, I think, for either of those schools. And Tennessee was not in the Arch Manning sweepstakes. So, you know, Nico was the top of their board. I think that weighed into his decision a little bit. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into this. I do think he looks at Josh Heupel's offense and says, this is something where I can put up a whole lot of numbers and play in an exciting offense. And we didn't know if that would sell as well at this level. Josh Heupel has sold that offense elsewhere, but it's usually with three or four star quarterbacks. The fact that he will have a five star now, if Nico indeed signs in December, and it's a long time from now, then we'll see an elite talent or the possibility of an elite talent with, you know, what was the highest scoring offense in UT history last year. And that'll be a pretty unique pairing.
It's interesting when a five-star quarterback, you could say, could be a consolation prize. I don't think he is for Tennessee, as you pointed out, Adam. I think for Alabama and Georgia, maybe he would have been the consolation to Arch Manning, who, you know, Alabama and Georgia have long been among the headliners for Arch Manning, the number one overall prospect from this recruiting class, who's uncommitted, of course, the nephew of Peyton Manning. But for Tennessee, this isn't a consolation prize. I think, you know, Nico could have been for Alabama or Georgia. John, how do you see this, you know, in terms of this is the same class that Arch is in? Do you think it was extra important for Tennessee to, you know, to land a really good quarterback here, knowing that what that Manning name means around Knoxville? They knew they weren't going to get Arch, so you got to deliver somebody. And I mean, they delivered a pretty big fish. If you move past Arch, you still get, you know, Nico there in the top five in terms of the quarterback rankings and a five-star recruit.
Tennessee has never been in the Arch Manning sweepstakes. So I just think, regardless of his being in this class or not, I think this was so important for Tennessee football. I think it's a tremendous sign, a promising sign for where Tennessee football is headed. And Adam mentioned it already. And from everything I read, and I mean, we don't have a solid source that says he's getting a lot of NIL money, but I think all the top-of-the-line quarterbacks are getting a lot of NIL money now. They go through a collective which pairs schools with athletes, and you can get together and you can work this thing out. And I think it says a lot about Tennessee's fan base. It's a fluent fan base. I think Tennessee fans are desperate and they're tired of being mediocre. And now they have the opportunity to buy themselves back into prominence. And I think that's the explanation for this. I'm not saying he wouldn't have been attracted to Tennessee and Josh Heupel, since Heupel is a really good offensive coach. But I just think this has to be about money.
Does this quiet the final concern about Josh Heupel? Because I think, you know, year one, he exceeded expectations. The offense looked good as advertised. He helped the quarterbacks almost overnight. I mean, we can talk about how he picked the wrong starter out of the gates and Joe Milton, but whatever. You know, he moved on. He switched to Hendon Hooker. Hooker had the best season of his career by far. You know, I think he showed a lot of positive signs, but still, for me and I think many others, there was that lingering thought of, is he going to recruit at a high enough level to shoot Tennessee up the ladder in the SEC? Now he's landing commitments from a five-star quarterback. Does this put that concern to rest, do you think?
Yeah, it puts it to that question to rest, but I mean, there's always another question. Unless you're Nick Saban, you've still got questions that sort of follow you each sort of rung on the ladder you make in this conference. And I mean, the next one for Josh Heupel would be, can you pick the right quarterback? This came into play this past year when you had the quarterback competition and he chose Joe Milton over Hendon Hooker. He had to go back to Hendon Hooker, and that worked out great. He developed him. He worked him into his offense. A year from now, we're probably going to look at Nico and Taven Jackson, a very good quarterback, a four-star quarterback who I'm watching in spring practice this week. And we're going to say, is he going to pick the right one? That's going to be the next question, because let's say if you look at Milton and Hooker this past season, Milton was the one more physically imposing that you were impressed physically with. I'm not saying that's Nico, but in the comparison here, that would be more Nico. 6'5", cannon for an arm, looks the part, tremendously athletic. He's actually a phenomenal volleyball player, run, jump, all the measurables. And Taven Jackson he's not the same type of quarterback as Hendon Hooker, but he's a very good quarterback, but less wow factor to him. Is Nico the sure thing in there, or can Taven Jackson take advantage of an extra year in the offense? And so we'll see another quarterback competition. And so maybe UT won't have to go through it this year, but they'll have to go through it next year. It's a good problem to have a five-star and a four-star competing. That's what other schools at the top of this conference do, and that looks like that's what's going to happen next spring.
When you sign a player of that magnitude or get a commitment in this case, it can impact your entire class, because this is the kind of quarterback that other guys want to play with. I'm speaking in the offensive realm here, but you're going to attract receivers. There's no question about that. So that's why the commitment at this time is significant for Tennessee. As far as the competition goes, I think coaches go for the wow factor. I think particularly the guys with the great offensive reputation, because when they look at a raw talent, and most people coming out of high school, some are more polished than others, but there is there are things you have to learn to do in the college game and make that transition. They think they're the guy that can best shepherd this guy through the process. Just give me the guy with the tools and I'll make him into a superstar. I think that's how the real offensive gurus think.
Yeah, and I want to make this clear, too, that, you know, what I was just saying there about Taven Jackson, four-star, and Nico, a five-star, the difference in guys with that sort of rating is that a four-star guy looks like a phenomenal football player, but may have a few questions, a few imperfections. If they can work those out and develop, then you know, you have an all-conference type player. A five-star is a guy, usually there's anywhere from two to five in a given year in a class in the country. There's five in Nico's class. Those guys are ones that you look at and say there's no real imperfections. I had a story in the Knox News this week that broke down over the previous decade how many five-star quarterbacks there have been and how much they panned out. And there were 22 in 10-year stretch. More than half of them transferred. 13 of the 22 transferred. But, and there's a cross-section of these, 12 of the 22, a little over half, ended up being star players. About half of those ended up being Heisman winners or Heisman candidates. Bryce Young, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, Jameis Winston, Justin Fields, the list goes on and on. You bet better than 500 of having a phenomenal NFL early round pick Heisman candidate guy. More than 50% you get with a five-star quarterback. Again, the flip, the other side of the coin of that is they usually don't wait long. So, again, 13 of the 22 have transferred. So, what you're getting there with a five-star quarterback is the potential, the likelihood that he will be a program difference-making player, but you also get a guy that typically has been impatient, that does not wait to his junior, senior year to play. You have to play him early, and you have to play him often, and that's what maybe you'll get with Nico. Maybe the asterisk on that is if the NIL money is as high as it's as rumored, you may have a guy that's locked into a contract for longer term. And so that's a guy that maybe wouldn't transfer because the NIL would keep them at their current community around that one university. So it'll be interesting to see in this new era that we have the transfer portal in NIL, if a five-star guy will hang out longer and if they'll play him early.
Even a five-star quarterback, there's only so much one recruit can do, but I think it's in terms of game-changing commitments, this is about as big as it could get for Tennessee. But I know there's always a danger in saying that things are going to change overnight. I mean, Ed Orgeron said, "We coming," and LSU came and went, and that was that. You know, Philip Fulmer in 2019 roared, "The Vols are back," and a couple years later, Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt were out of a job. So I get that there's a danger of going into this territory, but does this commitment sort of plant a flag for Tennessee and send a message to the rest of the conference that you can't count the Vols out anymore? You can't consider Tennessee to be a laughing stock. They've got a head coach who doesn't make a fool for himself, knows offense, seems to know quarterbacks. You know, they got their first five-star quarterback commitment in 20 years. Do you think this is sending any sort of shockwaves throughout the rest of the conference that, oh, maybe Tennessee's chugging along the track here and aren't going to be an afterthought anymore?
I think that, I mean, you need to get more than one guy, but when I was listening to Adam relate those percentages of how many quarterbacks have become stars out of five stars, and it's pretty good percentage that they make it and they aren't a bust. So you go back and Tennessee got a five-star quarterback in James Banks way back when, and he was a bust. So the odds, based on those numbers, the odds are very good that this guy will be the real deal. I think now the five-star guys are more developed than they were 10 years ago. I think they've got passing trainers. They've got all the they've been in a different an offense that complements their ability. So I think this is I think it's just a great sign for Tennessee.
I think what it does too is that it sort of stretches out the narrative around the positive narrative around Josh Heupel and his tenure, because, you know, it was a good first year, a lot of positive vibes coming out of the first year. Year two is that a lot of guys return, Hendon Hooker's back. Maybe they build on it with the schedule. They can win a little more. And it looked like that may be the stopping point or the pause point. Okay, what then? now you've got something for a year and a half from now. Well, the five-star quarterback's coming to town. So when you're talking about the perspective around the conference, I think it pushes the positive vibes for Josh Heupel's tenure forward. It's good first year. Okay, Hendon Hooker and build on the second year. And then look, that they can keep rolling with a five-star quarterback, and then you keep on going from there. I think you're not in danger of pausing momentum now. I think you have a better chance of pushing momentum forward with this.
That's a really good point. It keeps that momentum rolling. I think even if this season is another, you know, seven and six year, or say they win eight games. I know there's a lot of high hopes for this season, but let's say it's a good but not great year. I don't think that tamps down the long-term outlook for Tennessee because of what you just said, Adam, the five-star quarterback coming in. I think that's a great point. You know, John, I mentioned James Banks, and, you know, the James Banks era, as we've alluded to, didn't turn out to be much. But you go back before that, and the five-star quarterback Tennessee brought in then a couple of years before was Casey Clawson. And he had a pretty darn good career for Tennessee, won a lot of big games for the Vols. Do you think Casey Clawson did he deliver on that five-star rating or come pretty close, do you think?
I guess you could say his career was more of a four-star. When you think of a five-star, you think of first-round NFL draft picks, don't you? I mean, Casey wasn't that, but you would certainly take him, somebody that won that many games, and he came in, didn't always, he took a lot of shots. He didn't always have the best blocking, but he did at some point. He was just very competitive, very effective, and started as a freshman, as a true freshman. He won the job about four games in and never let go of it. So, yeah, if you get a guy now, well, you can't really hope if he's that good, you think of him as a three-year starter. But the situation is set up for him to start right away if he's that good. As Adam pointed out, Tavian Jackson will certainly have a say in that. He'll have a year's of knowledge in the system ahead of Nico. I almost tried to say his last name. I don't want to venture down that path. Yeah, I just think, and you know, to piggyback off what Adam said, the positive momentum. For example, the college game is so geared to a quarterback now. So next year, if Tennessee has a good year, or if it has a year just as good as this past one by Tennessee standards, fans are going to be a little concerned about losing a starting quarterback. But now, as Adam pointed out, you can look ahead and say, well, heck, we might even have a better quarterback coming down the path.
Let me give you sort of a scale that we're talking about. Again, the past 10 years of five-star quarterbacks. Top end, Trevor Lawrence. The sort of the middle, Bo Nix. And the bottom, Jeff Driskel. Remember, Jeff Driskel was at Florida, didn't work out, ended up at Louisiana Tech. So that's sort of the range that we're talking about. If you get a Trevor Lawrence or a Bryce Young or a Kyler Murray or Justin Fields, any of those guys, of course, obviously, that's a home run. That's a Heisman candidate, player of the year type guy. That's the top end. You don't want a Jeff Driskel. You don't want a guy that just sort of flames out and you have to start somebody else and then he transfers elsewhere. What about a Bo Nix? How do you guys – do you think it's – if you end up with a Bo Nix, a guy that – SEC freshman of the year, had an all SEC season, won some big games, put up a lot of numbers, played for a long time. He's going to transfer now to finish up, but should UT fans be happy with somewhere? Would they be satisfied with somewhere in the middle, like a Bo Nix?
Yeah, I think you wait 20 years for a five-star quarterback and he becomes Bo Nix. I think that's a disappointment.
I mean, Auburn fans weren't happy with Bo Nix. He was a talented guy who was a terribly inconsistent at Auburn. And he could have had more talent around him. He could have had better receivers the last couple of years. But still, that's not what Tennessee fans are thinking. Nobody said, man, we could have the next Bo Nix. Whoopee.
What about a Christian Hackenberg? He's on this list. That's the all-time passer in Penn State history. But
you could have given John five guesses as to who the all-time leading passer is in Penn State history, and I don't think he would have got to Christian Hackenberg. I know
would have come close, and I can't even remember watching him for one play.
Okay, what? So then we're talking about UT fans should be satisfied if Nico is an all-SEC quarterback.
Well, he could be competing with Arch Manning for that first-team all-SEC spot.
What does this mean for Taven Jackson, though? Because as you said, Adam, it's not like there has to be a landslide of difference between a five-star guy and a four-star guy. There's plenty of four-star quarterbacks out there across the country every year that put up big numbers, and some four-star guys have better careers than some five-star guys. And so they have a four-star guy in the fold now. I know you've seen him at practice, Adam. And of course, yeah, early in the spring, he's probably going to debut somewhere around third on the depth chart. I know you've written as much. You got Hendon Hooker back. You got Joe Milton back. But projecting long term, more so than just in this moment, what does the commitment from Nico mean for Taven Jackson?
Well, for Taven Jackson, I mean, I think it speeds up his clock. You know, we've talked about this in previous pods about who you play as the number two quarterback this year. Hendon Hooker is a starter. Do you play Milton or do you play Taven Jackson? Taven Jackson, they could afford to slow play him as a freshman year. If you're Taven Jackson, you have to have at least a sense of, am I the backup that could then start next year? Or am I still the number three? Do they not trust me to be the backup this season to Hendon Hooker? And if that's the case, you got to feel like you lose the ground that you otherwise would have gained in your freshman year. Because if you're still the clear-cut number three and they trust Joe Milton more than you, let's say in November, well, Nico's coming in January. He'll be an early enrollee. And you have the potential of just not even getting a leg up. If you're Taven Jackson and you can play yourself into that backup role, then I think you feel confident, a little more confident of being a half a step ahead of Nico when he gets on campus. He has to take advantage of this head start. Otherwise, you run the risk of Nico coming in, taking the spot, saying this is a better version of Taven Jackson. And then you're talking about a guy that could jump into the portal. Not to say that he would, but that's the era that we're in college football now.
I want to close with this. You guys have been in this state, obviously, a lot longer than I have. I know, Adam, you know, before this year, you were covering Vanderbilt, but you've been around the conference. You've been around Tennessee. John, you've been here since General Neyland. So both of you probably have better perspective than I on this. But it seems like for me, and tell me if it goes back further this, if I'm missing something, this would be the most excitement around Tennessee football since entering the 2016 season, where the Vols were coming off a 9-win year. They crushed, I believe it was Northwestern in the bowl game coming into 2016. And of course, then frustrations mounted in 2016 because Tennessee had a great chance of winning the division that year after starting 5-0. They fizzled and Butch Jones came into the 17 season on the hot seat. But do you think this is as much excitement that's been around Tennessee football since entering that 2016 season, or do you have to go back even farther than that, do you think?
Well, I think in 2016, yeah, that was a high point, and I'll push it a little closer to now, not just before the 16 season, but after winning those big games, early season games against Florida and Georgia. I think that was the most excited Tennessee fans had been probably. Man, you might have to go all the way back to 2001 when they beat Florida in December to win the SEC East and go play LSU in the championship game with an opportunity to play for the national title. There were some good seasons in between, but I think of those as high watermarks in terms of fan optimism, enthusiasm, 2001, and then not again until way up in 2016. And I think now, because I think mainly fans really believe in Josh Heupel. They really think now they have a good coach. And I don't think they've thought that a lot for a while.
Yeah, I'll throw another one in here. What about finishing up Lane Kiffin's year in 2009? I understand that was a loss in the bowl that year, but I do feel like just from a 5,000 foot view, so to speak, I feel like UT fans looked at that and say, we think this guy can win consistently. We think this guy can bring in talented players. We think this under this guy, there's an identity to the team. Kiffin then, Heupel now. I think people looked at and said, this will work over a five-year stretch. Maybe with Butch, there was still some sense that this is up now, it could go down. I feel like with Lane Kiffin, at the end of that first year, there was a belief that this is going to steadily go up. And I think that's more of the sense that I get with how people feel about Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think people compare Josh Heupel in terms of as an offensive coach, they compare him to Lane Kiffin and what Lane Kiffin offered the program. Josh Heupel doesn't have the same outrageous personality, but in terms of offense, yeah, that's a good point. I don't think people really were convinced that Butch was a real deal, but you had to give him his due when he beat Florida and Georgia back to back.
Yeah, and in the almost 5 years I've been here, there hasn't been a ton to celebrate. I think about on the heels of that 2019 season, Tennessee was flying high with the way they finished that year. Big win over, close win, but an important win over Indiana, it seemed like at the time, in the bowl game and coming off a good recruiting class. But even then, you know, it wasn't that many months before that Tennessee started that season 0-2. The Georgia State loss is still kind of lingering in the back of the mind. So I think, you know, certainly the excitement now has to exceed that. So I think what we're landing on is, yeah, that start of the 2016 season is a good comparison. And then before that, you got to go back to the Lane days to find something comparable to now.
Maybe Blake, with Jeremy Pruitt, the six-game winning streak to close out the season, and he follows that up with two wins in 2020, and he's leading Georgia at the half.
Very specific.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a pretty good moment for Tennessee. The Vols looked pretty good against Georgia in that first half, and you know they've already got two. They had a really impressive win against Missouri. They beat South Carolina, not a great win, but the momentum, eight wins in a row, and you're leading Georgia at the half. And then it just all fell apart.
That's a good reminder of, yeah, how quickly things swirled the drain for Jeremy Pruitt. But it's not going in that direction right now. And spring practice underway. Adam will have all the coverage throughout the spring over at KnoxNews.com. And you can also check out his continuing coverage in the aftermath of this commitment from the five-star quarterback, potential program changer for Tennessee. Thanks for listening to this edition of Volunteer State.